Part 4. Sending Superman. Nothing fails like success, because we do not learn anything from it. The only thing we ever learn from is failure. Success only confirms our superstitions. Kenneth Boulding. 15. It was possible to exercise at Earth gravity on Sunseeker just by jogging 6-minute kilometers in the direction the deck was rotating. Beth sweated but didn't make that speed, running on the spongy turf and sucking down the chilly ship air that always seemed to taste faintly of oil. An hour into her slogging, choppy run, she felt better in the odd way that returning to good gravs did. A sensation of solidity, of the body's chugging machinery settling back into its groove. If she ran fast in the same direction the deck rotated, she increased her speed of rotation, and so increased her weight. She reversed for her hard-pounding finish. Going fast against the rotation, she nearly floated like some sticky angel on air, her bare feet barely skimming the soft fabric. She sped around the outer habitat circumference in her shorts and sopping T-shirt and lurched into the showers, gasping and happy. The shower next to her went on. She leaned around the corner and saw a finger snake wriggling in the spray. Foshta?
Hello, Beth. This device is Delight.
The thin, sliding voice somehow fit the dancing eyes. Yes, but do not use it too often. We can't recycle the water very fast. Beth stepped back in and turned the shower on, a giggle tickling her lips. The finger snakes had no sense of privacy. She got herself in order, feeling much better. Exercise calmed, made her world brighter. Ready for Red Wing. Maybe. 10 minutes later, she rapped on his door. He was wedged behind his desk, leaving her more room in the narrow captain's cabin. His wall display showed the slowly passing infinities of bowl landscapes. At the moment, low mountain ranges in a low-grav region, with cottony cloud masses stacked above them. She had seen such clouds from below while swinging through the spindly trees on vines of thin, flexing strength. The clouds were nearly as tall as Earth's entire atmosphere, and from the ground looked like an ivory cliff that tapered away to a speck. "Hope you're feeling better." Red Wing, rising. Unusual for him, indeed, to shake her hand.
"Admirable performance down there. I'd like to get some background from you, away from the others."
"I think if we met as a group and—"
"A unit commander always reports first."
Red Wing's crusty face wrinkled into a grin, but she knew beneath the wry, leathery look he was absolutely serious. "Oh, back in the Navy we are, yes sirree."
"Before we get to specifics, bring you up to speed, I want to know what it was like down there."
She was prepared for this, because the shipboard crew all asked the same thing. They had spent months eating canned food and breathing desiccated air, gazing down at a whole vast thing gliding by, like having a terrific top view and no way out of your cramped apartment. Still, she struggled to put the experience into words. Wonder, terror, hunger, spurts of fear, aching weariness fringed with a lacing anxiety that every time you closed your sticky eyes and fell into sweaty sleep, you could wake to find yourself about to die. "A tailored wilderness. For days you forget you're not on an alien planet but on the skin of a furiously rotating machine. The stars always there, and after a while, even after you've learned to sleep in shade and heat, you hate it. Darkness, I can't tell you what a luxury it is to turn out the light. There's weather, for sure, lightning that seems to be sheeting yellow all around you, and the jet, like a golden snake twisting across the sky, always on the run, looking to see if something's coming up on your tail to eat you, going for days without a bath, running without water even, feeling your steps get lighter because you've lost weight without even noticing it, hunger being sometimes the only thing you can think about." She made herself stop. With the crew, she had been able to hold back, but here, with Red Wing, she couldn't, and realized that something in the smile, his head nodding as she spoke on and on, the eyes dancing with interest, had made it happen. How did he do that? Maybe it was something you had to learn from commanding ships all over the solar system.
"I know some of that," he said, face now open and eyes far away. "You don't get to pick the nightmare that wakes you up at 4 a.m., it comes looking for you, again and again."
This was a startling moment, taking her unaware. He was a man in a hard place to be, and she read in his gentle downturned smile a rueful regret that he could not possibly, as captain, go down there. She made herself sit up straight, regain some composure.
"Keep your smile in the upright and locked position.
My mom used to say, a truly happy person is one who can enjoy the scenery on a detour." He laughed, a hearty, full-throated roar in the metal echo chamber of his cabin.
"Good one. Damn true. This whole thing is a detour."
This last sentence came out of nowhere, with baritone notes of regret. He sat back and took a moment to see the mountain range far below slide away on the wall, a huge glimmering eggshell blue sea lapping against the mountain's slate-gray slopes along a narrow beach.
He knows how to pace this conversation. Let it breathe.
He swiveled back to gaze at her with deep blue penetrating eyes.
"Tell me about the food."
She held her breath for a long moment, comparing the bland, warm, forgettable dishes she had wolfed down in ship's mess, realizing that while she ate eagerly, it left no trace of memory.
There was something we could shoot out of the trees when we were desperate. A fat primate thing in the low grav region. Stringy meat, yellow fat, looked like a big roasted monkey, but when you'd gone 2 days without anything but a kind of thick-leaved grass, it was heavenly.
Taste human?
How the hell would I know?
Then she saw he was grinning and laughed.
Not that I would have cared.
You could digest it?
Surprisingly, yes. Of course, we had all the biotech compatibility injections and a handful of pills. I had all of us start taking them as soon as the aliens—they call themselves the folk, just like primitives on Earth—gave us food. We held out on our own rations for a while. Then I had us cook the live game they gave us.
Live?
Yes. They were smart enough to let us prepare it our way, which they watched closely. We dispatched them with our lasers. Simmered some. With some herbs tossed in, it stayed down pretty well. But once, when we were hiding near somebody, something, searching for us in the tall tree region, we ate fish. Raw. In fact, I had to be still and not give us away, afraid to get out my knife or laser, so I ate it while it was alive.
Not for long, I bet. Sashimi's still moving.
Unpleasant. For me and for the fish.
You all lost weight.
Even after eating yummy dried worms, very ripe, like sticky jello, live ant-like things, as big as dogs in the low grav zone, crunchy embryos in the shell, tasted good, but I felt horrid after it, don't know why. A fried scorpion-like thing, two tails. The head was bitter, but I ate it anyway.
She paused. It came back so easily.
Trying to forget that one. Bizarre, memorable.
Redwing smiled fondly.
Hey, I ate haggis once in Edinburgh. So, thanks.
She blinked.
Thanks for what?
Then she saw. The yucky food made him yearn to go down there a little less, and he had gotten her to unload some, too, get some of it behind her. A ship's captain is always about moving on.
So I wondered, what kind of weaponry can they have down there? Gray goo bombs? Nerve flatteners? Old-style shaped charge with spinning flechettes?
I didn't really see weapons.
Cliff did. I'll get to that in a moment.
Cliff!
The crew had been evasive about him and his team, but they did say the Cliff team seemed healthy and still free. Quite a tribute, they said, considering. She had thought to shooting back,
considering how he got snapped up right away, but didn't.
Point is, what can we expect from them?
I think they want to control this, keep us around. Preferably in a nice, spacious prison like the low-grav one we were stuck in, while they figure out who we are and if they can use us.
Use us? For what?
Maybe make their big whirling machine work better? New tech? Though it's hard to believe we could tell them anything. They built this.
You're sure?
Well, they run it, anyway. It must be really old. Maybe somebody else built it? The big one who interrogated us, Memor, was evasive on that.
He frowned.
Hiding something they don't want outsiders to know?
Yes, it's a puzzle.
or maybe a really ancient mystery. I wonder if even the folk don't know where the bowl really comes from. They do know the terrain, though. There are life forms that dazzle any biologist, some I couldn't figure out at all. Cliff must be in heaven. He likes taxonomy. I filled up my digital photo files keeping track of the plants and weird animals. Some are bizarre, and others are kind of like Earthside, but changed. Larger, for one thing.
Because the grav is less, 0.8.
She nodded. That, yes. Could also be the island effect.
Which is?
We see it Earthside. Small islands have smaller animals. The last mammoths lived on Siberian islands, the smallest of their kind because the resource base is less.
So, continents here are sure bigger. Some are larger than Earth. So are oceans. Seas, I guess we should call them. They're shallow. I've studied them in close-up scan while you were down there.
Redwing brightened. Here was something he knew and Beth didn't. He flashed pictures on the wall, and she realized he had cooked up a slideshow. He went through it eagerly, describing how and where he had found the images. He and Carl had worked up a bowl version of longitude and latitude. Numbers marked each slide.
So much open territory. Forests as big as North America, not a town anywhere. But cities the size of countries back home. Hell, bigger than our continents. I'd sure as hell like to know who made it and how.
Beth nodded. It had been an impressive show. The folk may have built it, or know who did. They're unlike anything I've ever seen. Think of elephant-sized, 2 feet and a heavy tail, big eyes and mouths, and feathers they flutter around all the time like it's some kind of coded fan dance. He grunted and frowned, which she took as encouragement. She knew she had to write a report, but telling it helped shape the story. Enthusiasm began to steal into her voice. They examined Tananarive for long times, and a big machine that seemed, she said, to read everything in her body, plus her mind, somehow. She could feel tingling all over her, sensations like quiet little sparks, she said. There were plenty of other smart aliens around, most with hand-like things that Earth never evolved. A sort of wriggly tentacle that split out into feelers, like you might see on an octopus that could make tools. They worked for the honcho, the big folk creature in charge named Memoir. Terrifying thing when it loomed over you, huffing hot, smelly air in your face. Memoir was in charge, all right. Once I saw it, her, whatever, eat something that was still alive, a kind of crunchy armadillo the size of a pony. It bellowed as she chewed it up. Disgusting. But sights like that were just getting started.
Redwing gave her a concerned look.
If you could...
Sorry, once I get started... Okay, it'll be in my report.
Everything you recall. Anything could be vital. We just don't know enough.
Beth nodded. It had all come rushing out, the pent-up emotions and thoughts of months on the ground, every day tense and wearing. She took a deep breath. Anyway, this memoir seemed to read Tananarive and ask questions about how her mind worked, what she thought of, how it felt to think. Odd stuff.
Redwing pursed his lips and looked down at the vast clouds coasting far below. His wall screen amped the image to the max, so they both watched huge purple cloud anvils towering over a seemingly endless sea. There were sandbars the size of the Rockies lounging in the sea's green shallows, like tan punctuation marks. Vegetation dotted them, and one dot she judged to be the size of Texas. She had learned to let him have his silences, as he let her experience settle in with all the rest of what he knew. Beth sucked in the dry ship air and tried to recall the cloying, thick, aromatic atmosphere they had wondered about. Alien air, they called it, because of the syrupy way it filled your lungs with a heavy, cloying sweetness, unlike any flower she had ever known. The smell was still on some of her carry gear. Up here, in dry, antiseptic rooms, she sniffed it and liked the aroma and body. Breathing it in, she felt something like nostalgia.
Redwing nodded as if making a decision. You can review Cliff's messages. Some text, some voice. Short, to the point. Don't be alarmed by them. He had not much time to report in. Reception is bad. We should have sent you down with more robust comm.
Our good comm gear was in the landers.
Of course. That's how the folk found out our operating frequencies, broadband patterns, encryption. For the landers and for the hand comms, too, damn it. so he and you could get through only a short while. Then the folk auto-screens went up, and it was all fuzz.
Look, Cap'n, we had no way of knowing.
I should have been more cautious.
He shook his head abruptly, face pinched.
I used the landing protocols we rehearsed Earthside. Simple stuff for an uninhabited planet. No defensive measures. I went by rote when I should have been wary of anything like this. An impossible machine churning through space, managing its own star to...
He broke off, she saw, knowing he couldn't vent his inner doubts to officers or crew. Yet it helped him, she was sure, and he needed it. A man like Redwing had spent his life wanting authority, getting some, then some more, all the time finding out how to make it work, how to move up a ladder everybody wanted to climb. Nobody had a captaincy forced on them. Nobody told them it meant keeping yourself to yourself for long years and decades, and for starships, the rest of your life. He swiveled his chair away from the constant landscape sliding by, and looked at her with an expression made rigid by force of will.
Cliff described a mass slaughter. He was hurt. Not too bad, but he took days to even be able to call in. Wounds, fever, the cruds.
We had the cruds a lot of the time, she said to be saying something, keep him from lapsing into a monologue again. This captain needs help, but then we all do.
I got reports just this watch, from Cliff, pretty noisy. The folk killed a whole damn city, some kind of living blimp. He sent two pictures, hard to believe even then. And Howard died.
Oh no, he was...
Always thought he was a little too inquisitive, couldn't move fast. I downwrote him in an operations report during crew training, but command ignored me. He didn't come into a shelter fast enough, Cliff said. Got burned with a weapon tuned to our nervous system. Heats up the skin some, overloads the neurological system. Fries it, really. Pain like he'd never felt before, Cliff said.
It was Beth's turn to look away. We had it easy.
But these ally aliens, as Cliff calls them, the Sill... They had scavenged around in the blimp thing. Got some folk comm gear they'd never seen before. Those Sill are smart. They got it running, broke the encryption barriers on the folk message center, pried out all sorts of stuff they can use, and something bigger than that. Lots bigger, that we can use. The folk had a message, just came in recently. The tag said...
Redwing leaned across the desk, laced his hands together on it, spoke directly at her,
from Glory.
Beth had been in sympathetic mode, trying not to think about Cliff's wounds, Howard being fried, and all the rest, but this made her snap out of it.
Earthside never picked up a peep from Glory. No leakage, no ordinary surface EM traffic.
I know. This is plainly different, directed at Earth.
How do you know?
Here.
He thumped his desk, and the wall turned from sliding perspectives of a tan grassland swept by waves the size of continents and became a cartoon. Line drawings, vibrant color, purple background, traceries of yellow on the edges, twisting like snakes. A strange red-skinned asymmetric being with what looked like three arms stood alone, facing the viewer. It began a rhythmic move, arms rotating in their sockets in big, broad sweeps, except the third, which somehow lashed up and down, then made a wide circular arc with a sharp snap at the end.
Athletics? Beth thought. Or some diplomatic pose? Ritual? Kabuki theater among the stars?
The thing wore tight blue-green sheath clothes that showed muscles everywhere, bulging and pulsing. The covering seemed sprayed on, showing a big cluster of tubular... genitalia? If so, male... not between the legs but above them, where a human's belly button would be. They, too, bulged as she watched. The skin-tight covering ran all over the body, including the wide-gripping feet, but the arms and its head were exposed. The head was triangular and oddly ribbed. Two large black eyes. No discernible nose, but three big holes in the middle of the face, echoing the face's triangle, with big hairy black coronas around each hole like a weird round mustache. A large mouth with two rows of evenly spaced gray teeth. For a moment the viewpoint closed in on the head, which looked like an Egyptian pyramid upside down, ferocious,
with mouth twisting, then lips rippling with intricate fine muscles around the gray teeth, which kept clashing together. The front three teeth in both rows were pointed, evil-looking things, and the mouth had puffed out lips to accommodate them.
"So far, just an introductory picture, looks like," Redwing said. "No sound. But then we get action."
Beth was still blinking in pure astonishment. Her father had centuries ago called this a what-the-hell moment. She had met uncountable aliens, fled from some, killed some, eaten many. But this? The viewing angle expanded, and walking in from the right was a human. Beth gasped. The man wore a blue skin-tight suit with a red cape. Big head, black hair, clearly a man, yes. Muscled, striding forward proudly, and the alien third arm struck out, caught the human in the face. A nasty slap. The man staggered back. The alien made a half-turn and thrashed the man, slamming him away and then grabbing him by his right shoulder, twisting him into full view. There was a large red S on the man's deep blue chest.
Superman!
Beth did not know whether to laugh or just gape. She did both. The alien leaped, twisting in air, kicking Superman in the gut. He went down hard on the rocky ground. The graphics were good. Beth could see Superman's shock, surprise, pain. Dust puffed up where he fell. Vigorously, the alien leaped high, paused while it made more mouth gestures directly toward the viewer, and came down hard on top of Superman with obvious relish, slamming down with both big feet. Superman's mouth opened in shock and surprise, eyes bulging, showing white. The alien fanned its two arms, whipped the third one that seemed slim and sharp, and brought it down on Superman's head. The lash brought blood streaming from Superman's left ear and, incredibly, splashed big red gobbets on an imaginary window between the scene and the viewer. The blood ran down in rivulets while the alien raised all three arms into the air, head back. The effect made Beth rock back, as if the blood had flown in her face. She gasped. Prancing, whip arm twirling, the alien proceeded to dance on Superman. It sent more kicks to the head and gut as the opportunity arose. The alien looked full at the viewer as it pranced, eyes even bigger. Its image swelled to fill the screen, and the eyes glowered at the viewer. Stop. A long silence.
Pretty clear message, I'd say.
Redwing clasped hands across his belt and leaned back in his flex chair. Beth could not take her eyes from the alien head, its threatening expression frozen.
They eavesdropped on something, TV, I guess, or...
And chose to send a message a child could understand. Stay away.